Oyez, oyez, oyez. All persons having business before the Honorable, the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and its Honorable Court. Be seated, please. Case number 07-3025, United States of America versus Jerome H. Jones, appellant. Mr. Hart for the appellant, Ms. Gerardo for the appellee.
Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor. Please, the court. My name is Dennis Hart. I appear today on behalf of Jerome Jones. Mr. Jones is going to ask this court to consider what I think everyone would consider to be pretty mundane everyday activities as part of an analysis of the Fourth Amendment challenge. While they're everyday mundane activities, they're very important because they'll determine where Mr. Jones spends the next 7 years. But I think they're also important to the public at large because they'll provide a guidance to the police and define this court's view of the limits of the Fourth Amendment in regards to a Terry stop. As the court will recall, this is a relatively simple case for the facts. The transcript runs only a few pages, and we've included it in our appendix, and there's only one witness, the arresting officer. I think the government's response is a multi-layered one. That is that the officer who approached Mr. Jones had a reasonable, articulable suspicion to make an investigatory stop before anything happened. We challenge that. They say that fallback position is that there was a reason to arrest him for assault on a police officer when the first shove started, or push. And failing that, there was probable cause to arrest him when the struggle ended up, I would say, on the police car hood. We agree with that. The police car hood struggle did generate a probable cause for an arrest. The first two, however, we'd like the court to examine in some detail because we don't believe the government is entirely correct in their conclusions.
Why don't you think that the alleged assault was sufficient to at least allow, you know, an expanded investigation?
The reason for that is because we have such a tiny view of what happened. We have only the officer's statement that he was pushed. Now,
well, but the district court credited his testimony.
Yes, well, yes, it did.
So, yeah.
And our argument is the following: is that because we have such a tiny view of that, it is difficult.
What does that mean? A tiny view of it.
All we have is the statement, "I was pushed,"
which the district court credited. You're not denying this. You're not suggesting we should.
No. Okay. I'm not saying he wasn't pushed.
Yeah.
What I am saying is that I made a list here of things we don't know about that claimed assault. And the list begins with, we really don't know the position of the two people. That is, if you read the transcript, I'm a little confused.
Well, can I take you back to the beginning?
Certainly.
You say we only have a narrow window. Your position is that the cup, him holding the cup, wasn't sufficient, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
But he said to the police officer that he was, quote, just drinking.
Yes.
And he was arrested for violating the open container law.
I don't think he was arrested for that. I think that was.
Well, that's what the police believed. That's what the policeman believed he was doing, right?
That's what the officer.
Violating the open container law.
That's what the officer claimed he was investigating.
So, but I ask you the question because in your brief you say the cup was not sufficient, but you don't deal with the fact that he also said, quote, I was just drinking. Why isn't that enough right there?
Drinking alcohol in public is an offense. Drinking in public is not.
Do you make that argument in your brief?
No.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
But I can
so
tell.
So if that argument's not before us, then.
I'm sorry.
If that argument is not before us.
I would say it is.
Well, no, you just conceded you didn't make it in your brief. So I know I think you made it in the district court, but you didn't make it here.
Well,
and so we won't consider an argument not made in a brief, right?
That's the general rule, Your
Honor. Okay.
But I would ask the court to consider this as a natural offshoot of the argument of lack of articulable suspicion.
How can it be a natural outgrowth of an argument you didn't make?
Well, maybe I should withdraw the admission. I'm not making the argument.
Then. Oh, well, then where is it in the brief?
Well, it's in the brief in the sense that we claim that the presence of a cup does not make it articulable suspicion for drinking alcohol in public.
I understand that, but he said, quote, I am just drinking.
And I agree with that, Your Honor.
And the police officer believed that meant he was drinking alcohol, and that's why he was suspicious.
Well, I think that's the critical question this court has to face.
If you've raised it.
I think it was raised, Your Honor.
Can you show me in the brief where you made the argument?
I think the argument is there is no articulable suspicion for the officer's belief he was drinking alcohol based on the statement, I am drinking, or I ain't doing nothing, I'm just drinking.
Well, I know you want us to focus only on the cup, but wasn't there a lot more for the officer to consider?
There was a lot more, and I think that is an important observation, because what we don't have are the other observations that would support articulable suspicion.
No, but by that mean what? It's around midnight, there are 15 to 20 people on the street. The officer says it's a partying atmosphere.
Yes.
And your client says to the officer, I'm not doing anything, I'm just drinking.
Yes.
And he has a cup and a brown paper bag under his arm.
Unscientifically, as I walked to court today, I passed about 11 intersections. Holding a cup in your hand is sort of like modern urban outfitters. Very few people pass the day without having a cup in their hand walking on the street.
I understand your point, but I'm just saying that we have to deal with the totality of circumstances to decide whether a prudent officer under those circumstances would have a plausible ground for further investigation.
I agree, Your Honor. Let me tell the court what the court didn't hear, and that is it didn't hear.
But my point is you don't have to have everything under Terry in order to have enough for the officer to make an inquiry.
No, I agree with that in principle, Your Honor, but the point we're trying to make is that the officer can cherry-pick what he wants to tell the judge to support the articulable suspicion. I assume he's an intelligent officer, he's done this before, and he knows what to say. The question is what he's told the court sufficient in the totality of the circumstances, and we suggest it's not.
Okay.
Thank you.
Your counsel for appellee.
May it please the court, Leslie Andrardo on behalf of the United States. The district court properly denied appellant's motion to suppress. The undisputed evidence that was presented at the motions hearing demonstrated that the police conduct in this case was at all relevant points reasonable and that no Fourth Amendment violation occurred. I think as the court was correctly summarizing, the totality of the circumstances that led to the initial stop, which was a Terry stop and required only minimal justification, were that it was midnight, 15 or 20 individuals were congregated on a public street, engaged in what the officer described as a party-like atmosphere. One of those individuals, appellant, seemed to take particular note of the arrival of the police and moved away at a much faster pace than his companions. He had in his hand a styrofoam cup, under his arm a paper bag, and he stated, I'm just drinking. At that point, I think it was completely reasonable for the officer to inquire further to determine whether he was drinking an alcoholic beverage, which would in fact be a violation of the DC code.
So is it your position he was seized when the officer told him to come here?
I think in appellant's brief, they identify the first point at which a possible seizure could have occurred at that point. And operating from that point, it would have to be a Terry stop or justification for a Terry stop. And we believe there was justification. The command combined with the movement of the officer towards appellant would, I think, be a stop. And at that point, it would only need to be justified by reasonable articulable suspicion. And that existed. Once the officer moves forward to speak with appellant and tells appellant to Once the officer tells appellant to come here, appellant pushes the officer. He shoves him. That's an assault. That is a completed crime, if you will. And the officer at that point has probable cause to arrest. Moreover, appellant reaches towards his waistband and tries to get into his right side of his waistband, which also gives the officer an articulable suspicion that he has a weapon. So whether the subsequent struggle and detention and seizure of the weapon flows from probable cause to arrest for APO or reasonable articulable suspicion to frisk for a weapon, either way, everything the officer does at that from that point forward is justified and within the bounds of the Fourth Amendment.
As I understand the appellant's argument, this was all pretextual.
There's no evidence that it was pretextual. The officer testified. There was no contrary testimony presented. The district court credited that testimony.
Best I can understand the argument is that the police weren't responding to any complaint. Six officers got out of two cars around midnight, and his client is just standing on the street with a styrofoam cup that's got a lid on it.
The fact that the officers weren't responding to any particular complaint that night doesn't make this pretextual. I mean, actually, I think it underscores precisely what we would want our officers to do. The officer testified that this was an area where there's lots of drug activity and repeated complaints on prior instances, so they went in to check it out and see what was happening on that particular night. And they happened to see a large number of people congregated at midnight and all the other facts that we've discussed that then gave reasonable articulable suspicion in this particular case.
But doesn't that mean, I mean, what you've really got here is the police show up, they're not responding to a complaint, there's nothing that they are investigating, there's nothing that they know is wrong at that particular location, right? And part of what they say is, well, when we showed up, everybody moved away, which, you know, not that unusual, and normally people have the right to just move away, right? I mean, there's no reason why they have to all just freeze in place and wait for the police to decide if there's anything they want to investigate. So in a way, they use the fact of people moving away, which is something that their presence generated, as, you know, a basis of articulable suspicion why they can then stop them.
Well, I think, Your Honor, the articulable suspicion arises from the totality of the circumstances. There can be any number of reasons why police officers appear at any place in the city at any point in time. It's not why they're there, but what they observe once they get there, that the court has to examine to determine whether in a particular case reasonable articulable suspicion exists. Here, once the officers arrive, notably, they don't draw attention to appellant simply because he's one of the people that moves away. They draw attention to appellant because he moves away much more quickly and seems to be take much more notice of the police than anyone else present. And while doing so, he's holding a styrofoam cup with a paper bag under his arm and turns to the officer and spontaneously states, "I'm just drinking." It's all of those factors in combination that give rise to the reasonable articulable suspicion.
But isn't it? I mean, you're just going to say that the police show up and whoever seems most nervous in their presence then is a target, right?
Not necessarily. I mean, the police could have walked up. There's nothing wrong. I mean, I think this court's jurisprudence, Supreme Court jurisprudence, makes it clear that the police can stop and engage in a consensual encounter. If they had walked up and simply stopped and asked these folks, "Hey, what's going on? Anybody, you know, what's happening?" There would have been nothing wrong with that.
I could walk away, couldn't
right? An appellant could have here, too, up until the point where he gives enough information to the officer to raise a reasonable suspicion in the officer's mind that he may be drinking in public, at which point the officer does properly say, "Come here," so that the officer can investigate further. It's the spontaneous admission, "I've been drinking," in combination with the cup and the brown paper bag, which, as we know, contained an open bottle of alcohol. It's the combination of those facts that gives rise to the reasonable articulable suspicion.
But he's not arrested for that, actually.
No, because
for the gun, right?
He's arrested for the gun. That's correct. He could have been arrested for the assault on a police officer. I mean, the officers chose, I think, at that point, the most obvious crime. He had the weapon. If the court has no further questions, we ask that the judgment of the district court be affirmed.
Thank you. Counsel for appellant.
Thank you, Your Honor. I brought my list back because I'd like to remind the court, when it considers the totality of the circumstances for the drinking charge, number one, appellant was never seen drinking. Number two, none of the officer did not testify that he saw any others in the party-like atmosphere drinking. Number three, there was no smell of alcohol, either in the air or on appellant's breath. Number four, there were no neighborhood complaints of drinking. Number five, there were no empty bottles on the ground. There were no abandoned styrofoam cups on the ground. That's number six. Number seven, there was no loud or disruptive behavior as the officers arrived that would indicate the consumption of alcohol. And the last one is that when the officer spoke to the defendant, he indicated that the defendant did not slur his speech or give any indication of drinking alcohol. That must be factored in the totality of circumstances. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Mr. Hart, you were appointed by the court to represent appellate in this case, and we thank you for your assistance to the court.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We will take the case under advisement.